Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this special edition episode with financial astrologer Georgia Stathis. So this is a question that so many of you have been sending in, wondering about the financial outlook, both current, what's going on, and then long term, what to do with your money, what's going on with real estate, what's going on with the economy in general. And so I am so thrilled to have Georgia here with us today. Georgia, we did an interview like 3 years ago, I think.
I think that was right. Yeah, about 2017 or 16. Yeah.
It was one of our first summits. It was a summit on how astrology can help you with your health, wealth, and love. And you were one of our wealth experts. And so it's just great. Gemini Brett recommended that we have you back. And it was like, oh, yes, Georgia, amazing. So thank you so much for being here with us. It's such a pleasure to have you. All right, so let's start with current. So we have the current, what's going on. Can you speak to us from an astrological perspective, what's happening with the financial situation right now?
Well, I think that the world is in flux right now because we've had this, obviously everybody's talking about the pandemic, which nobody, you know, I'm not going to get into politics, but it is really the elephant in the middle of the room as far as the economy changing. And it has displaced people from their jobs. It has moved people out of buildings, which were all have rents that are due, and long-term leases. It has caused some problems with, well, the weather too has caused a lot of problems with farms. And the other thing that's happened, because people are now not working in buildings, if they're office people, they're working at home, which is completely opening up all kinds of industries like Zoom and GoToMeeting and everything else. And that's going to create, it's a snowball effect. Everything has been, it's been such an extreme change, so extreme, which is when human beings change. When people get too comfortable, I don't think they change very much. And we got pretty comfortable the last 10 or 15 years, you know, or last 20 or 25 years. And all the planets that moved into tropical Capricorn at the very, and are still plodding along with Pluto, you know, the last holder on or on for another 2 or 3 years. Yeah, this, we knew it was going to be a difficult period. And actually, when I did the ESTAR conference recently, I was talking about, there's this thing in nature called a peduncle. It's actually a real word, P-E-D-U-N-C-L-E. And the peduncle is the narrowest, it's a very narrow, narrow opening. It's kind of like a funnel, the skinny part of a funnel. And you'll see a peduncle goes up to the brain and carries all the nerve endings. You'll see peduncles in the stems of plants where they carry all the juice, but it's a tiny, tiny space. And so basically, and Capricorn is very peduncle-ish because you have to get down to the bare bones, Capricorn, minimum of what you can or cannot live with or be. And so all these planets at that point have created a push for everybody to go through this peduncle and only take a few pieces of baggage with them and leave the rest behind. And actually, quite symbolically, I'm still in California. I never got to my home in Florida this year because of things. A lot of homes were lost, and people even got out if they were lucky with one suitcase. That's a peduncle. And mass migrations and refugees being bombed out of their homes. This has been going on, not, you know, just didn't happen this year. It's been happening for a long time. And there's a mass migration of human beings all over the planet right now. And in fact, I always bring this book up. It's a very old book, but it's an excellent book by William McNeil called Plagues and People, written in the 70s. And his thesis was that the economy changed, the world's economies changed, not because people had a good idea and they changed things. It was because of massive plagues.
Wow. Interesting.
Where people had to leave their homelands, where they had to go unite with other cultures, change things. And that's a peduncle. You know, I mean, this is mass migrations. And I think in the United States, both coasts, particularly the West Coast for the last 3 years, are just so flooded with fires now that I feel that people will be leaving this state in droves. And the irony of that is the state is still selling homes at outrageous prices. People are still buying homes here. But a lot of the people that have lived in urban communities, you know, cities or high rises, whatever, especially people that are in the younger generations that are still dealing with raising families who now have to teach their children at home while they're working at home. There's a new movement to move into more urban areas now and buy small parcels of land where you can have chickens, a farm, and where you can work anywhere in the world. And the good thing about this is, I mean, there are some good things that happen when you have these things happen, is before this pandemic hit this year, a lot of companies just didn't want to send their people to work at home because there was the issue of, well, can we trust them? You know, can they work? Do they work their 8-hour shift? Are they going to be happy? Are they going to be lazy? And now they found out of necessity, because there is no choice here, that people can work at home and they work actually more efficiently because they don't have to travel 2 hours to go here and 2 hours to come home. That has been a domino effect. It has changed the way we are working, so that I could still work anywhere in the world and be in a farm in, you know, Illinois or, you know, Tennessee or wherever I want to be, as long as there's internet. And because of this growing movement financially, a lot of the large 5G networks, not Huawei, because that's always a challenge with security, will have to be developed. And I think that's going to be a big industry coming up, is 5G networks, because not only are we going to have to work at home, but with the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction that already has been in play by parallel, for those who understand that astrologically, actually Jupiter-Saturn have been parallel since 2019. They don't legally become a conjunction until December 21st of 2020, but they've been in play already. Wow. And the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction, which is also quite interesting, is coming up in the sign of Aquarius, which is an air sign. And, you know, a lot of people have said a lot about this in a lot of conferences in the last 6 months, but basically we are leaving about a 200-year cycle of Jupiter-Saturn conjunctions in Capricorn, and not in Capricorn, in Earth signs. And there has been a very large, over the last 200 years, building of capitalism, buildings, foundations, properties, homes. And now we're moving into a much different kind of society. I think it actually began around 1981 or 82 when Jupiter-Saturn did enter Libra, which is also an air sign, kind of like the preview at the movies for what would be coming up now, starting in 2020, all the way to 2199. I mean, the last Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in an air sign will be in April of 2199. I've already looked that up for the conference we just did recently. And so as you move from earth thinking, which is all these buildings being emptied because everybody can be doing air things and being on the networks, we see changes. We're going to see change. We've seen already changes in fashion shows. There's all kinds of fashion shows online now because they can't do them live. That's created a new industry for providing fashion shows that are a little bit more realistic. This then moves you into the financial options for virtual reality. Where eventually, you know, the technology is very expensive right now, but eventually you can just put on a headset and watch a Broadway play rather than watching it on your, you know, your computer or your screen, which people are doing now, because masses of people cannot meet at all in large places. So this changes all the industries because of this difficulty. And what it does is it means that what's left, do we destroy what's left? No. We have to repurpose what's left. So this means that a lot of, for example, shopping malls in America, there are approximately, from what my statistics show, 1,000 shopping malls in America. I'm just talking America right now. I don't know about the rest of the world. They began in 1956. There is a prediction that within 3 to 5 years, 50% of those malls will close. And they're big. I mean, if anybody's been to a shopping mall, they're big, right? So then what do you do? What do you do with those buildings? Number one, with an increasing population, what you do is you repurpose the building, a future for investors. You know, you repurpose it. You put in medical facilities, you put in housing, you put in grocery stores, you put in things where people don't have to be driving. And people are learning not to drive now, because they're ordering everything online and people are lazy, you know, and the weather is changing radically in the world. We're having extreme heat or extreme cold. I mean, I know in Chicago, where I grew up on the south side of Chicago, we always had blistering cold, cold winters. And I go to Chicago. I haven't been able to go now because of the pandemic, but I go pretty frequently, and all the downtown apartments and condos all already had in the last few years had grocery stores and dry cleaners underneath. So you don't have to go out into the blistering cold. You just go downstairs. And so this is the thing that we're going to see changing, that and all the shopping areas that will not be repurposed for housing and mixed use will probably be moved into warehouses for mail distribution of some sort, you know, deliveries of some sort. And the other part of it is some people don't want to have deliveries. Like I said earlier, they're going to move to places where they can grow, you know, they can grow their own vegetables. You know, they can raise their own animals. I know in the Midwest where we do a lot of investing in corn and soybean farms, and it has been a hard year for the farmers. A lot of things, tariffs, weather's been terrible. But what has come, and also, you know, when everybody's not using the things we're using because of the pandemic, you have to change. So what's risen up in the Midwest now are a lot of little specialty farms. You know, where they have a special kind of dairy cow that raises, you know, and they have a certain kind of dairy product, and people go, it's that farm to table movement where you don't go far away and they don't bring it to you. You're just living near it. And so even though it is so very difficult right now, currency, money, I mean, recently, I mean, I've seen that the real change, hard change, you know, pennies, dimes, there's a shortage of dimes and nickels right now. There's a shortage because everybody is using cards. They're using currency that is only a plastic card. And the thing about currency that is a plastic card, a statistical study was done a few years ago. I don't know what it is now, that people will spend 33 and a third percent more than they made because of cards.
Wow.
Because you're not counting it, you know, you're not counting it out. And then there's the issue of counting out the money and working off these. This is a very important thing I want to bring up, because next year in February, in June, and December of 2021, there's going to be a last quarter, which means a closing, finishing up cycle between Saturn and Uranus. And it's pretty rare. I mean, Saturn-Uranus conjunctions take place about every 45 years. The last one we had was late 1988 at 29 Sag. It's called a synodic cycle. That's what I based the new book on. But what you want to watch when you're in any sort of cycle is look at the closing last quarter cycle. Because at that juncture, you have moved about three quarters of the way through the cycle, which really, if you think about that, you can't go back at three quarters. You might go back at a quarter, but you won't go back at three quarters. And I found in the research in my book, Pushing Through Time, that the last quarter phase is the most difficult of all the phases of the synodic cycles, because people don't know they don't see a future. Hello? That's what's happening now. Actually, in February, I think, or March of this year, 2020, there was almost, but not exact, a Saturn closing square to Uranus, and then it backed off. And historically, whenever you have hard aspects between Saturn and Uranus, the markets get very volatile. And we've already seen that this year. A very strong volatility in the marketplace. So, but the other part of this is too, that Saturn-Uranus has a lot to do, along with the Jupiter-Saturn in Aquarius, with global positioning systems. We have a global positioning system out there, satellites. They were built, I think, 60 or so years ago, and they are due for updates and repairs. And we do all our cash registers, we do all our networks, we do all our Netflix, our TV, we do all of it now with the GPS system. And a military organization called Space Force was started by this president a few years ago. And, you know, whatever you want to believe about it, there was an interview with one of the people that are coming on as the commander of Space Force, who used to be at the International Space Station. And he said in an interview on NPR that the first order of business with what they're doing with Space Force is to go through out there and clean up all the space junk that's floating around from when they blew up some satellites from India and China. China, I think, did it first, and later India did it. And if any of that space junk hits our satellites, we won't be able to have interviews like this until they repair it. And so that is one of the issues I see coming up for next year, which is why people really should learn how to make change and do math, which a lot of people don't know how to do anymore, unless they have a calculator, which works because you have batteries. But this could take things down for a while on the Saturn square Uranuses. We could also see a lot of electric impulse kinds of things. And the other thing too, I wanted to share with you in the conference for ESAR, what I decided to do, because nobody really knows truly what a country's horoscope is, because as Nick Campion said, I used to be with Nick at Kepler when I taught, countries have many horoscopes. But there's a moment in time and a location on the planet where a conjunction will take place or a thing will take place. And so what I did is I went and looked at Greenwich, England for the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction to see where in the Greenwich chart the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction will be December 21st. And it is in the sixth house. And the sixth house is the house of Virgo. It's the house of processing systems, databases, getting organized, employee records, all the stuff we don't like to do that are important. It's kind of like the small, as I've said this, and I just saw Faye Blake just said this in one of her newsletters, which is perfect, that the sixth house is the house of Virgo, which is the small intestine. And the small intestine of the body is the part of the body that does all the work, because it has to decide, this is a good thing for the body to live, this is a bad thing for the body to not live. And it's a peduncle, really. It's a very thin tube. And so the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in that house sets it off for like 20 years, which tells me anything to do with systems, databases, medical international databases, those are going to be wonderful places to invest in, but there will also be a lot of kinks in the armor as we go along, because as we go along, we'll find out as we're using more and more of it where this is missing and where that's missing. A lot of the AI technology that's coming out right now with medical is amazing, because, you know, a lot of people have Alexa in their homes now, you know, where they say, Alexa, do this, Alexa, do that. I have my qualms about that because I know Alexa's listening all the time and taking notes. But it is an incredibly positive thing for people who are homebound, because it can now tell it's working on voice recognition. This is a new industry where if somebody is having a heart attack, rather than the voice alert that they're hanging, Alexa picks it up and sends people out. They're doing very detailed surgeries, long distance now with these kind of technologies, where you can have a surgery with a surgeon in another country and you're in this country and they can do the surgery because of these networks. And these are all the industries that we don't even know anything about yet. I mean, flying cars, you know, people make big jokes about it, but we already have aerial taxis. 1934 was actually the first flying car that was invented. There's a photograph of it in the Smithsonian. I don't remember the name. Waldman, I think, was his name. And now, you know, with everything that's going on with automatic cars driving around, which I'm still a little reticent about, but I think eventually we are going to have flying taxis and flying cars. And I think the precursor for that is the drone that we see now. Because the drones are fighting wars now. You know, you sit in a little Quonset hut in Nevada and you bomb another country with a drone. I mean, it's scary. But then on the other side of that is drones are now being used for, I know one of our foundations funds an ancient Greek history out of University of South Florida. And Dr. William Murray, he goes to Greece every year and he's doing research on ancient naval academies. And what they do now is they do drone photographs to rebuild the models and put them into 3D printing. So you can see the models of ancient history. I mean, it's just amazing amazing what's happening. 3D printing, you know, that started just a few years ago. I think it probably started around the Saturn-Uranus conjunction in 1988 in Sagittarius. But now in the medical field, 3D printing is actually producing bones for people, replacement bones, because it's hard. It's producing, I have a wonderful illustration that shows what they're working on, what they've developed, and what they is way far into the future. Another thing that they're doing with 3D printing is, I'm not a doctor, but there's a bone, I guess, in the ear that can be reproduced on 3D printing. You might not be able to get it out of a donor, but you can reproduce that and replace that inside of somebody, or replace a bone if you can't recapture the bone. the next level of what they're working on, and I don't know when this is coming, is lungs. That's one of them, which we may need in about 5 years after all these fires, because I do think we're going to see a lot of people with lung problems in the next 5 or 6 years who've lived out in these coasts, either mold from the East Coast or the fires on the West Coast. But the other part of this problem with smoke is, and with the pandemic, and this is a whole new industry that they're just starting to explore because people really want to be together. People don't like being isolated, is the major changes in HVAC systems, ventilation systems, filtration systems, so that every 3 to 5 minutes, the air is changing so kids can go to school and be safe. And that's just beginning because of this pandemic. I mean, a lot of the things are beginning now because of this pandemic. We just, you know, the problem I think that we're dealing with now, and I do think this is because there's a lot of planets in Capricorn, which is ruled by Saturn, is that people get fearful. You know, they start seeing people dying, and they see that they can't go out, and they see that they can't breathe, and they start to get fearful. And then what happens is you create this like universal mindset that nothing's ever going to get better, that there is no future, that there's nothing to look forward to. And yet the beauty of that, going back to the original idea of the peduncle in terms of what we're going to be when we grow up and what we're going to invest in and what we're going to, what's important also is that we've really had to step back and see during this terrible period, what is it really that matters to us in terms of our careers? Is this the career that we want? Or can we change it? Now, if it hasn't been working for a long time, you're probably going to get rid of it anyway, because it's either you got rid of it or got rid of it for you because of this. But if there's something that's not been working because you've been bound by Saturn, that this is as far as we can go, all the new technologies will open up the options. I mean, I just this morning, I was on a virtual with U.S. Trust and Bank of America called State of the Art 2020. And it was all of these artists from around the world speaking about how art is changing because of this. And there was walkthrough museums that they were showing of the artists that were speaking. And which is, I think this is an incredible, I mean, if I don't know how to do that stuff, I think all the younger generation is going to be incredible with this, that you can be here in California or wherever you are in Hawaii or Florida, and you can go to Stockholm and go to a museum and experience it like it really is a museum. I will share with you, this was an incredible experience. About a year and a half ago, I was in my home in Florida, and I always, St. Petersburg has about 14 museums, and I love the city because of that. And one of the museums is the Salvador Dali Museum. And they had an exhibit with Salvador Dali and Walt Disney because they did work together. They made a small film, not a great long one. And in the last exhibit, they had a Dali painting, and they put on the virtual reality goggles, and you actually walk through his paintings. And that was a completely different experience of the art. I mean, when I think about it now, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And I think that these are the things we have to think about. And I think that the arts and music are really going to be a big industry coming up. Big, because of all of this has happened. People have to entertain themselves, you know? They have to entertain themselves. And if you've got more and more technology, maybe I can put together a museum exhibit, or maybe I can, you know, walk through an astrology chart. I mean, down the road, we'll have that where you have a class where a person can actually walk through an astrology chart. I mean, there's so many options here that if we get past our fear, we can get over to the other side. And I do think it's an opinion. I think that this pandemic will probably be with us for about another 6 to 8 months. It's my feeling. And we live with it. So anyway, I'm going on and on. I don't know if I've even answered any of your questions about financial, but these are all the industries. There's so many new things coming in that I was just blown away when I was doing the research, you know, for medical, for travel, for housing, even the way we invest. You know, everybody always thinks about the stock market as an investment, right? Or a money market fund is an investment. But there's other kinds of investments too. And this is kind of an out there thing, but I guess it's maybe because I'm a little older now and I've seen it. We not only can invest in ourselves, but also in There's a lot of money out there right now, even though the world is half and half, very poor or very rich. The middle class has kind of gone away, which is, it's going away, and it's very, very sad. But the thing that will save us in this whole process, I think, is the people that are the well, and there's, I have no problem with wealth. Absolutely have no problem with wealth. I've always been happy being, having money rather than not having money. But the thing that's the trick about wealth is that you have to give some of it away. It doesn't work if you hold on to it. And so in terms of investing, we look at these large companies like Google and Amazon, the FANG ones, and they do a lot, but there's a lot of young, really smart young people in America who don't have the resources. So why not invest in them? Why not create foundations where you can provide computers for, a school district that doesn't have the money? And this is what's going to happen, I think, what's happening, is that people are going to be moving away from, and it's not happening right now, but I do think it's part of the Jupiter, Saturn, and Aquarius, the humanitarian side of Aquarius. There's another side to Aquarius that I'm not crazy about, which can be dictators also. You know, the person that wants to tell you how to live your life, but doesn't want to be part of the group. Mm. Because Aquarius is the sign of extremes. It is an extreme sign. But there is a humanitarian side of it. And so investing in and setting it up tax-wise, which we still are able to do that, where you can actually take money and give it to a foundation to help young people get a computer, to help young people get a scholarship. The other thing that's changed markedly that will be changing even more, I think, is our education. Obviously, it's happening educationally because kids have to be at home now learning, and it, because it's such a new thing, it's like baby steps right now where, you don't know what to do, the teachers aren't trained. But what this is going to do is it's going to open up options for more and more people to get higher education, because they're certainly not going to travel to get it, and the cost. And then what happens with the universities that have, and most big universities are funded by donors. That is really what they're funded by. I know with Kepler, we tried for 8 years to become funded. We were authorized, but we couldn't get accreditation because we couldn't get the state of Washington to accept it as an undergraduate and master's program. So we couldn't get funding. But in our research, we found out that a lot of the universities have a lot of funding. So, you know, that's not happening. I mean, people aren't going back to school. So then what happens? You know, they're going to have to break it down a little bit and provide a Harvard that's online, you know, which is probably already there, not just for their students, but, you know, as a secondary thing. So we don't know when I had a friend, she's gone now, and she used to talk about she's the one that introduced me to the idea of the peduncle. And the way she explained it is, think about two funnels and put the skinny ends together, okay? So our life has been, in the beginning of 2020, people walking through the open end of this with all their baggage. And our life now through 2021 is walking through that little tiny piece without anybody helping you. There's a lot of lack of help now with nothing. And then when you come out on the other side, it's a completely new experience. And that's exactly what's happening in this historical moment in time right now. Anyway, you should ask me questions because I could just yak and yak and yak. But
I have so many questions, and it's also fascinating to listen to what you have to say. So I haven't wanted to interrupt you at all.
This is how I think.
This is amazing. Okay, so if you all have questions, please do write those in the chat. If you're watching live, if you're watching the recording later, we won't be able to answer them. But please put them in the chat. Okay. So let's talk about, one of the things you talked about was this move to like more of the farm to table, sort of like people moving out of the urban areas. So would you say that there will be a return to more of like a local market kind of focus where we're circulating wealth within our local markets versus the thing that's been happening where it's sort of centralized in certain places?
I think it's already happening, but I think it's going to grow more. Okay. I think it's going to grow more. And the reason I think this is, again, going back to the farms in the Midwest, you know, which it's still really cold there in the winter. And, you know, I remember growing up in Chicago, you know, you go to the grocery store and everything was wrapped in saran wrap because it was brought from someplace else because you couldn't get fresh like you could get in the coast, right? So I just heard from one of my farm brokers that what's happening with a lot of these local markets in the Midwest and the farms in Illinois, is they're beginning to develop these little specialty insulated off the freeway exit ramps markets. They're like greenhouse markets.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay.
Isn't that interesting?
And do you see some of the like malls and some of these buildings turned into more of like using that space for food production, like local food production?
That's actually very smart. Now that's a forward-thinking woman right there. Yeah, I think some of these places could, because we can grow things indoors, and with the weather changing as much as it's changing, it's possible.
Right.
And if you can do a greenhouse market, why can't you do a greenhouse market inside of a shopping center where you live and where you can go see your doctor?
How cool is that?
Or you can go to school.
Right.
You know,
right.
within the framework. And then if you want to go see your buddies, you can. Yeah, I don't see why that would be a problem at all. But you have to have people who own those shopping centers be visionaries to do it.
Well, I think a lot of the young people are already seeing these things. I mean, I remember seeing models of how we can turn skyscrapers in New York City into like the rooftops being places where cows can graze and where you can literally have
roofs.
Yes, exactly. So there's a lot of people thinking of things, ways that we can reinvent some of the things we've been doing that haven't really been working for us. I think everybody would agree. Okay, what about, there's a huge question around cryptocurrency. So tell us what you think astrologically about cryptocurrency and what's happening there.
Well, like I said, I think most people are using cards now. In fact, some people won't even take cash anymore. I know that's true. So cryptocurrency.
You think we're going cashless?
I think we're going to be going cashless eventually.
Okay.
I mean,
all right, let's go back to crypto.
You're starting to see a shortage in change. I think eventually we will. But the thing about cryptocurrency is that the thing that they like about it, but there's a lot of problems still with it as well, is that there's no middle person. There's the buyer and there's the seller. And there is, at the moment, that's why people use it. There's no middle person, like a bank taking their percentage or the credit card taking its percentage or whatever. But the underlying software, this is the thing that I think it's more important to look at, is called blockchain. And blockchain it looks just like a block. It looks like a series of blocks. And basically it's a closed transaction. In fact, do you know who this, she's kind of an odd musician, Bjork?
Yeah.
You know, Bjork is, okay, yeah, she's an interesting character. She's been using crypto blockchain technology for selling a lot of her music.
Hmm.
And the reason they do this, it's going to be great for artists, because when you make a transaction with the artist, you buy it, nobody takes their cut, the agent, anybody, and they get the full amount. And in that moment, the transaction is recorded and sealed. And they're starting to use this in real estate transactions, the blockchain technology, so that, okay, at this moment is when the deal happened. I mean, this is just, it's baby.
This is having to wait a little bit for the financial institutions to process it and approve it and all that stuff. Okay.
Right. So the interesting thing about this is one of the biggest, and I know this firsthand from one of these bank people, is one of the biggest banks in the world, which I think is interesting because banks always get their percentages, right? When you buy or sell or whatever.
Well, they don't like this, right? I mean.
Well, I don't know if they don't like us, but I know one of the biggest banks in the world has one of the highest amounts of patents on blockchain right now.
Oh, okay. So they're just going to find a way to capitalize on it. Got it.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the underlying technology is blockchain. And so, you know, there's a lot of people working with cryptocurrency. I don't know much about it, but I do know about that technology. And that's the reason for it, is that you get rid of the middle person, which means that a person who's not making as much money can actually make more money.
Right.
Because there's nobody taking a portion of it.
Yeah, it's a big deal, actually. I mean, even anytime someone buys a course from us, we have money going to all kinds of different places.
Oh, yeah, they take this, yeah. They take that, you send money here, they take that. But that technology doesn't allow that. So that completely changes the industries too, but I don't know enough about it at this point.
Well, so what's the drawback? I mean, why...
Well, I think, the drawback. Okay, let's talk about drawbacks. And I think that's anything that's in the beginning. It's like anything that starts out new has holes in it, right?
Right, yep.
Okay, so one of the big things that's already been happening is cyber fraud, business email compromise, BEC it's called. And it's growing by leaps and bounds. Actually, in a lot of transactions with properties now, it used to be you just, you know, you notify the bank that you're going to wire the money, escrow wires the money. But now it's very, very, they're very careful. They're not just going to give you the wiring instructions. They have to double check it because there's a lot of cyber fraud. And DDoS, which is overrunning the server so that you kind of lock down. And that's what happened recently in New Zealand about 2 or 3 weeks ago. The New Zealand Stock Exchange shut down for 3 or 4 days, I think, because of DDoS. Something was happening where they were being flooded and they could not process the orders. So there's these chinks in the armor as we go along. There's people that are, this is a whole new business too, cyber criminals. I mean, you know, that's a whole new industry. And then that opens up a whole new industry. You know, it's like Pandora's box. People are going in and they're figuring out all these ways to get into all these, you know, your company, my company, the banks, the markets, the New Zealand Stock Exchange. So then you need people who know how to put in place security measures so it doesn't happen. That's a whole new investment arena.
Well, and they have to get paid somehow. And that's how we got in this position in the first place. I mean, I went to buy a new water filtration system and it was a bigger transaction. So my bank stopped it. Now in this, it's to make sure that it wasn't fraud. Right. And so I had to call and, you know, tell them it was okay to approve it. But that is the service that they're offering because of fraud. So if we're doing like direct things, I can see where it opens up. It's great on one hand, but on the other hand, you lose some things from that. So we'll see how
it used to be looking at your transaction. If you had put it on your card and they didn't have the checking point, that they would have lost $300 or $400 or $1,000 and you would have gotten it back, but they lost it. Right.
Yes.
So they had to figure out a way how not to lose that.
Yes.
So then they started implementing all this texting that, you know, this person just bought this. Is this you? I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for it. It's a pain sometimes, but this is what happens when you have these crises. It opens up new industries.
Yes. Okay. So what you're saying, and I can't wait to ask you your story for how you became a financial astrologer. We'll do that. We're going to do that at the end. We're just going to flip things all upside down.
Okay.
So I asked you about local markets. What about real estate? I mean, you've talked about it and you've talked about how it's going to change, but what would you say for, let's say someone's thinking about selling their house right now or moving somewhere right now. What's the real estate outlook in general?
Well, I think, you know, real estate runs on about a 19-year cycle when the nodes, the Metonic cycle, comes back every 19 years to the same node. And the peak and the, you know, where it's peaking is around Cancer. You know, in terms of interest rates. But the thing that's happening is they keeping the interest rates low. Now, if you have good credit, the interest rates are like 2.6% right now. And there's the good news for that, and there's the bad news. And this is why you have to know both. This is why you can buy a $1.2 million house at 2.6%, because your payment's going to be a lot less than if it was at 9%. Which, when I say 9%, people really go, 9%? Well, that was considered to be That was the lowest mortgage rate in the 60s. I've got the mortgage tables. We used to have mortgage rates at 9, 10, 11, and 12%.
Oh, my gosh.
And then what happened in the late 70s, early 80s, the mortgage rates went to 20%. Houses were in this area, California, in a middle-class neighborhood, they were $80,000. Now that house is selling for $750,000, but that was a 20% mortgage rate then. And so what people are doing, and this is what, you know, I'm always very cautious, but maybe I'm a little too conservative, is you have to really think, because people think, well, we'll keep making money and making money and making money. I think that we're going to see slower sales because you can't keep making money and money and money on top of it like we've had in the last 5 years.
Slower sales in houses?
there's a slower selling of houses now. Yeah. So right now, a lot of people are selling in areas that they want to get out of because the rates are low. And this is why it's a good time to sell, because somebody will pay $1.2 million at 2.6% rate. If it goes to 4% next year, which it may, they're not going to pay it.
I see.
You know, so this is, and then the other part of it is your dollar. I mean, a dollar in California is worth is a very different dollar. I mean, it's the same dollar than you can get in a place like Arkansas or Tennessee. And then the tax issues, you know, there's going to be a lot more taxes coming up for, I don't care if you're middle class, if you're poor, if you're rich, there's going to be a lot more taxes. This is one of the lowest tax paying countries in the world. I mean, in Denmark, they pay 25%, but they get everything for their kids. You know, they get the preschool.
Do you think the taxes are going to go up, but will there be a benefit for that, or just more taxes?
Well, I think there's a problem when you have a really, well, I don't want to get into government stuff. I think the problem with, we need to pay more taxes. Everybody needs to pay more taxes so we can pay for services. The problem is it's such a big country right now, 325 million. We talked about this before we started. We're not like Italy or Germany. Mm-hmm. We're 50 countries, right? There's no way to keep track of where all the money's going because we're so big. Actually, I think probably what would be a smart thing is to have four regional governments in the United States, because we have four very different geographical, because we only have 538 people that represent us in this country. 100 senators, 438 representatives, and 9 Supreme Court justices. Wow. We are 325 million people. We looked it up once. This started way back when the population was not 325 million people. And so this is, you know, this is going to change. This is why we need more taxes to pay for more services. But the problem is we have no organization on how they're being paid. We don't have national databases, which I think will be developed for medical. We need national. This is all that Sixth House Greenwich chart that I saw. If we could get more national databases where we can see all the medical, all this, all that, then we could see where the problems are. But the problem is the government's still working. A lot of them are working on DOS systems still. I mean, you know, we're doing great because we're working on Zoom and this technology, you know, but the government's, a lot of them are working on old computers and DOS systems. So, you know.
But Georgia, we're small enough to be, you know, obviously you and I, we're talking tiny companies compared to the government.
We're little, we're babies.
Yes, tiny, but we can pivot and move and innovate with the changing tides, where once you get so huge and massive, it's really hard to change one system. Requires so much organization and change and everything. So to me, like what you're talking about with four regions, even smaller potentially, makes a lot more sense. Because and also taking care of the needs that are specific to certain areas. I mean, even being out here in Hawaii, sometimes it's like, it's questionable. Like the things being decided over here, like don't seem to really apply for us out here. So it's very interesting. And I think what I like about your approach, and I know that this brings up a lot for people because we're talking about a lot of change. We're talking about a lot of potential icky sort of scenarios too. Like some of the things.
Yeah. A lot of ickies. There's a lot of ickies.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things around the technology can bring up this like, ooh, God, I don't know. That seems like more isolation. That seems like less humanity and less humanness, you know, that those kinds of things like make my antennas spring up and go ick. Although look at how I benefit from that right now. Look at Astrology Hub, look at our ability to do what we're doing. So there's the pros and cons to all of it. And there's the good side and the bad side. And looking at all of it is really smart, you know? And like you said, sometimes we get so fearful that we close down and we don't see that there could be opportunities too, along with some of these things that feel threatening.
Yeah, you know, when I wrote the Business Astrology 101 book, I have an illustration in there, which I love. And it you know, it's basically just the solar system showing Saturn being the last visible planet. Mm-hmm. And of course, the others that we've discovered, because I know the Vedic people only used to Saturn, but you know, modern astrologers, we use everything. And the point being is that before telescopes happened, when people would look out at the night sky, that was the boundaries of the universe with Saturn. And, you know, Rob Hand also taught at Kepler, wonderful astrologer, of course. I think he said, Saturn I think Saturn is the perception that there is a reality. Saturn is the illusion that there is a reality, and Neptune is, how do you say it? Saturn is the perception that there is a reality, and Neptune is the truth that it is not. Something like that, he said. And the thing is, Saturn, fear, you know, I mean, it's also survival too. Saturn's not a bad thing. I mean, Saturn makes us survive. I mean, when push comes to shove and we have to get our, you know, fannies going because things are happening, we get things done, and we're willing to take nothing with us to get it done. That's the survival instinct in human beings. And I mean, that's what's activated this year with all these planets in Capricorn. But there is, when they discovered Uranus in the late 1700s, the out-of-the-box thinking, you know, this is, you know, Uranus is in Taurus right now. Taurus is ruled by Venus, which is our value systems. Uranus in Taurus is about waking up to what are our values. What do we really value? What is it that we don't value anymore? This is why a lot of the airline stocks have plummeted, because nobody can travel, right? A lot of oil is plummeting. Of course, it's gone up a little bit, but it plummeted for a while because nobody was traveling. I mean, Uranus in Taurus is waking up to the values that we have in the world. And it's also waking up to, you know, things that Venus rules. You know, farming is ruled by Venus. Waking up to new ways of farming. Go vertical. Don't go horizontal.
Right.
You know, vertical farming, you know, or go in a shopping mall and raise a crop, you know. Uranus and Taurus ruled by Venus is the fashion industry and the clothing industry. And one of the examples I gave, this is really funny. I was a costume designer at Northwestern University in Chicago, where I got my bachelor's of science. And I ended up doing that for a while afterwards. And when we used to build costumes for a play, we measured each actor, and then we had a formula. If we were doing something medieval, it was a Camelot, you had to put the actor's measurements onto this algebraic formula, calculate it, then draw it out for that actor. And I actually put the grid of that in my presentation for ESAR. And now, with AI, it's very expensive. But all you have to do is stand in front of a computer or an iPhone. They take your measurements, and you get to order stuff online.
Wow. Whoa. That's pretty revolutionary.
That's for that. Big. And that was in the 60s I was doing that. Now this is 2020. I mean, it's expensive, the technology, but it's coming.
Right. Right.
You know, so if I want to order a really gorgeous suit, and I love my clothes, you know, yes. I don't have to, you know, I can just put my, and it'll be perfectly fitted too. Right.
Wow.
Because when you buy something and it's nice, you want to fit it, because that's the key to good clothing. Uranus and Taurus ruled by Venus, new kinds of textiles being used, you know, using, what was it? I did a thing for Greece a few years ago on textiles. I did a whole thing on textiles where people are using like plastics and things to make
yes.
different kinds of clothing, you know.
Oh, I have yoga pants that are made out of recycled water bottles. They're the softest, most comfortable yoga pants. I mean, yes.
And they last, right?
Yes, they do.
And they wash beautifully, don't
yes.
they? Yeah. Before yes. we had cotton and wool, you know, those are the basics. And then we had, you know, the DuPont stuff. But yeah, that's the thing, is taking materials that people think are wasted and making them into something. Mm. I mean, I think when the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction comes, I think that's just a few years off, two or three. I think we're going to see a lot of this creative stuff starting to come out as a result of staying home and having to deal with what you have to deal with. People are learning how to make bread now.
Yes, there's a huge sourdough bread movement. It's hilarious. Right? Like, this happened and everyone's like, I want to learn how to make sourdough. It's,
yeah.
it's so
right?
funny. Yes.
I mean, it is funny. You know, maybe you're going to grow your own wheat. You're going to grow your own flour. I mean, discomfort breeds creativity. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry. So, you know. I still think it's
the mother
tough,
of all invention, right? Yes. Okay. So your outlook is positive for those who are willing to, is what I heard.
Couple willing things. To adapt. Willing to adapt.
Willing to adapt. Willing to let go of
right.
things that we don't need. So like slough off the excess, simplify and streamline so we can go through that little funnel at the bottom.
The peduncle.
Right?
Yeah.
The peduncle. I love it. And allow ourselves to be innovative and creative and think outside of the box. This is Aquarius, right? And
right.
Uranian energy.
And get educated with new skills, because that's one thing I missed when I was talking about the last quarter square of Saturn to Uranus, or any last quarter square. The research showed, as lost as people might be, they got, the key was learning something new.
Mm.
You know, learn, even if you want to go learn how to do silver mining. I mean, it doesn't have to be some logical thing where I should do this or I should finish my degree.
Learn astrology. How about
learn
that?
Learn astrology. Yeah, learn astrology. Learn, you know, whatever you want to learn. And that will be part of the key to the new direction, number one. And number two is to, if you don't know something, this is part of Aquarius, and you want to innovate something, collaborate with trustworthy people.
Yeah.
You know, set some rules, because Saturn has to still be in there. But you don't know, we don't know, none of us have a full complement of skills. You know, we have to, and Aquarius is the sign of the group. It's the sign of collaboration. It's the 11th house. It's the community in which we live, which is interesting that you brought that up. Farm in your community, you know, do compost in your community. And that also simplifies your life, too, if you think about it. You know,
exactly.
Create an educational group for your children in your community.
It's happening. And to me, that is definitely a positive outcome of this. It's my daughter, Madeline, sometimes they just sit and they, you know, daydream. And she's 11. She's about to be 12. She was like, there should be farmers markets everywhere. Why aren't there more farmers markets? Then the farmers make more money. We don't have to travel so far. We get fresh food. It's all organic. Why wouldn't that? And it's like, gosh, yes. And in some places there are little markets where people buy their fresh food every day. Where we are, I have to travel about 30 minutes just to go to the store, which just seems so crazy, because we live in this fertile place where it should be just growing out in my backyard, really. So it's a rethinking. And like you said, this restructuring of values, when all this started going down, it was like, you know, we used to value certain things that were disconnected from our food and our survival, right? We valued quote unquote, I'm not saying everybody, but you know, the big, huge house that was maybe the apartment in New York with the view. And now it's like, gosh, the fertile land, the great soil, the sunlight, like those things are really valuable. And maybe we should place more value on those things, because we can actually live if we have those things. So,
and in the large properties, you know, it's good you bring that up, because there's a lot of large houses, right?
Yes.
And a lot of younger people are, because of rates, but I think we're also going to see a movement. We've already been seeing it, but more and more people living together that aren't
blood family.
Thank
yes.
you. You know, yeah. More, that's very Aquarius. That's, you know, you make your own little community.
Yes. Well, in the big houses, I mean, at this point, it feels heavy. Like to me, it's like, it's heavy. It's a lot of maintenance. It's a lot of energy and time just going into the box that you live in, you know, versus being able to channel that energy into all kinds of other things that you may want to do. Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of good things, but it's like Pandora's box, you know? You know, when she opened the box, all these terrible things came out first, but then underneath was hope. And I have to believe that, you know, and I've seen a lot of really hard things in my lifetime. I mean, personally. And there's always a reason, though, and a change always comes because of it. And it's often because I wasn't willing to let go, you know, and I wasn't willing to adapt. I was fixed, you know, and I think that that's a key thing. Adaptability is survival right now. And learning things, you know, like as astrologers, I know we read this stuff, we write this stuff, we think this stuff, we get so completely immersed in our discipline. I know. I mean, when I was first learning, I would read 10, 15 books, stay up all night. But I would make a suggestion, if your astrologer's watching this, don't just get involved in this discipline. Read the science magazines. Read fashion magazines. Read Wall Street journals. Read people. Read all kinds of stuff, because information comes in from the most unexpected ways. And that's how you learn your astrology too, is you see, you know, the cycles really well, And then you see something happening there out there in the world that's not astrology. You go, oh my God, that is Uranus and Taurus. You know, and then you go back, you know, 30 years or 84 years in this case. What was going on then? That's like, that's how I do my research. I go back in time and look at these configurations, and I go back really far in time and see, even though it was not the same, there was a thread there, and it was a developmental sort of thing. So, you know, that's how we, and if you stay only in the astrology world, it can be very limiting, and at the same time, it can be very expansive. And I think it is important to read, you know, and hang out with friends that are not just astrologers. Now, get to know people in the banking industry, or get to know your banker, get to know somebody who knows how to save money, or get to know somebody who's really learned about stocks, you know, because there's some great, the market has some great, there's a lot of new opportunities in medical coming up, I think, and not travel, but medical and, like I said earlier, network development and new kinds of housing. And they're starting to do a lot of stuff with, I'm not really crazy about REITs, real estate investment trusts, but there are some new ways of doing that with land. There's also group, what we're going to start seeing too, because there's, you know, there's the big pattern has been in the United States, this is why I know the U.S., when you buy a farm, investors buy large acreage, 260 acres, 300 acres, and, you know, these farmers that are there, they, you know, it's not so much the farmers are really leasing the land from owners. This is what's happening, is a lot of families don't want to farm anymore because they've done other things. This is what the pattern was. And so farmers, groups of farmers, like large companies, will go and lease lands, and they'll have teams going to all the farms. But now the movement is, they're buying, people like us are buying smaller farms in the Midwest, like a 40-acre parcel. This was never seen until this last year and a half, where they can have a house, or they can just use it as income, or they can have it for the future. They didn't see this before. And so now there's a new thinking going, well, should we break up the acreage? Because what's happening, you know, it's.
I think this has really good implications for a lot of different things. And some of this big farming industry has created a lot of issues. So breaking it down into smaller, more manageable things where people are actually caring for that land and stewarding that land. And it creates a whole different relationship with the earth, which is going to benefit everybody. Okay, Georgia, what is your sun, moon, and rising? The Capricorn in me is like celebrating so much of this conversation, but I could be totally wrong. What do you have? Sun, moon, rising.
I am a Pisces sun, Mars conjunct the sun in Pisces, Taurus rising, and Jupiter in Capricorn. But all my Pisces planets, I have also moon, are all opposed by Saturn.
Oh.
I have a lot of Aquarius too, Mercury, Venus, and Aquarius, but I am a Pisces sun, and it's in the 11th house, so I often think I'm kind of an Aquarius Pisces.
Nice. Okay, now, I meant to ask you this very first question, which is, it didn't happen that way, which is fine. It's actually really good. How did you come to practice financial astrology? Can you tell us your story, please?
Well, it wasn't the plan. You know, I'm first generation Greek, and I was born in the U.S., but my parents, when we were little, you know, sent us to Greek school for 7 years after American school. And one of the teachers I had was doing the myths in Greek. That was one of our lessons. And I also started to read them when I was a little girl, like 6 and 7 years old, because they were stories, you know, they were more interesting to me than fairy tales, which I always thought was kind of weird. And then what happened is when I was little, like about maybe 12, my mom would give me a quarter to do the housework, which I actually did a lot of work for that quarter. And I go over to the local drugstore, and they had these little Dell books for a quarter on astrology. And I didn't know it was astrology. I just knew it was birthday books, right? So I would buy them. And then, you know, I did the myths. I studied myths. I studied a lot of, I know how to speak the language. And then what happened, I came to California in 71, and I was working at a PR firm in San Francisco. And we had a woman come in who was a temp, Irish. She was very Irish, red hair, very big brogue. And on our breaks, she sat next to me and she opened up this book that had the symbols on it to read. And I saw the symbols and it sort of triggered this memory inside of me. And I asked her, I said, well, what is that? I said, I think I used to read about that when I was little. Oh, this is wonderful stuff, you know. And it was Joan Quigley's book, Astrology for the Millions, Astrology for Adults. Big, thick book. And she's, oh, you have to read this. So she gave it to me. And I took it home. And then I was married at the time to my first husband. And he happened to have, during that time, astrologers on his radio show. And so I read the book in 3 days. I took it back to work. Then she didn't come back ever. And then I heard these astrologers. And I said to him, I think that's something I'd like to learn. And so that's how I got involved in astrology. But my family, my dad started out, you know, as a cook and a waiter. But eventually he became a real estate agent and he became a developer. And, you know, we had to work in our house. I was doing my dad's contracts at 10 years old. I was typing them on a typewriter. So, you know, it was always intended that I would be a lawyer. But I didn't want to do that. But I was always involved in business with his deals, you know, going with him to look at farms, listening to the 24/7 discussion about investments. And so then what happened is I kept working in advertising. And then around my 28th year, I went and got my MBA from Pepperdine University. And I had been doing astrology for fun. And I decided that I wanted to do this. You know, I thought, this is interesting. I was in real estate at the time. I was taking my MBA. I was seeing correlations to astrology. And I thought, you know, this is interesting. So I asked them at Pepperdine, a Catholic university, if I could do my thesis on astrology and vocations. Whoa. And I had two professors that were so gung-ho about it. But one of them, who had been from Northwestern, actually said, this woman is either insane or she's brilliant, you know, if she can prove statistically, you know. And I did my MBA thesis for Pepperdine University, which was accepted on vocational characteristics in advertising people. And at that point, you know, I was selling real estate. I was trying to make a living. I didn't want to work for anybody. And somebody found out I did astrology and they said, can you do my chart? And I started doing all these free lunches for people. And then there's some newspaper articles came out and I started to think about it, thinking, you know, I really like this more than the other stuff. And so I just went with it. I always had my hands in the other pie, but I did do this. I mean, I was doing 6 and 7 readings a day for 12 or 15 years. I had an office and I did a lot of writing. I raised my kids. But I always, you know, my dad was always calling me, we've got to do this business. You know, so I never really was able to get away from it. What can I say? I never became a lawyer, though.
You never became a lawyer. Oh, my gosh. And were you always in your practice, were you always more oriented towards helping people with their financial situations?
Actually, that's an interesting question because people would come first personal. And then somehow it would move into that. First, we would look at what the blockage was. You know, basically, I do a lot of personal work. But for some reason, I just went into, you know, well, maybe you ever thought about doing this? I mean, this is coming up in your chart and, you know, this is an industry that's kind of opening up now. And I don't even know how I did it, actually. I just did it. Wow. I mean, I really don't have a system. I do have a system, but I don't write it down on a form or anything. I should probably do that, but at this point. And that's what would happen. And people would come back. And then I did Business Astrology 101, where I did a lot of analyses of corporations in there. And I've had a lot of self-employed sole proprietors come to me over the years. And, you know, lots of times their charts are already established, you know, and then they want to come to you to fix something. But I've had a lot of electional work, too.
The business's chart is already established?
Yeah, like they've already been in business and say, look, you know, we need to expand or we need to do this or that or the other thing. Well, then we have to find out what's the right chart, which is always a challenge.
Right.
But I've had a lot of people want me to do an electional for them as well. You know, this is what we're doing. And the key thing about electionals, if anybody's listening, and I know Bruce Schofield wrote a great book. I used to teach with him at Kepler on electional astrology. I don't know if it's available anymore, but the key thing about electional I found with businesses, what people want to know, is you got to pin them down. I mean, I have a questionnaire in my Business Astrology 101 book. They want an electional, they have to fill out that questionnaire because if they say to me, oh, I want to open my business doing this in the next 3 years, it's going to cost them an arm and a leg, and it's going to be a waste of their time and mine. So I have very precise questions I ask. Look, that's my Saturn coming in. When are you looking at opening it up? Do you have a partner? You know, and what I've done is I've categorized the 12 houses without saying it's the houses. I just say, okay, is it important to have people who invest with you? That's the eighth house. That would be their number eight question. And that way I can kind of, yeah, right? They don't know what I'm doing, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So then you get something that you can work with. But you have to, you know, oh, I'm not sure when this happened, or I'm not, if they're not willing to do the work, I don't work with them.
Mm. Yeah, it won't be worthwhile. Won't have the payoff.
Well, and you know what, Amanda, it won't turn out right.
Mm.
And then what'll happen is they'll say, "Oh, this astrology thing, it's a bunch of bunk."
Right.
See, I'm a plan B-er. I try to think, if I'm going to do this, that's Mars on the sun. I had to learn this though, because I did a lot of things that were not plan B's. In my life. But now I think, okay, if I'm going to do this, what's the upshot? Is this, if something doesn't happen, then what am I going to do? If it does happen, then what am I going to do?
Right.
I think that's important, especially when you're dealing with Mars, which we talked about earlier before we started. Mm-hmm. Mars is retrograde right now. People are trying to make a bunch of decisions in their life. Mars is about motivation, making a plan, being strategic. You know, pointing the arrow at the target to make it hit. Mars retrogrades are not the time to make decisions.
Mm.
Especially Mars in Aries retrograde, right? And with the square to Pluto all the way through January, happens. And square to Saturn, I'd say, you know, ask a bunch of questions. Square Pluto, ask the questions that nobody asks.
Mm.
You know, the thing that's embarrassing, you know? Mm. You know, well, where is your money coming from if you're going to do this investment?
Right.
Or what is the history of this investor? You know, ask those questions. People are afraid to ask those questions, but if you don't ask those questions, you're not going to get any answers. And then listen to your intuition, because that's the other part. Neptune's squaring the nodes right now, and will be squaring the nodes at the end of the year. There's red flags coming up for people when they're doing investments. Most people put the red flags down and ignore them. I say pay attention to the red flags. And that's not fear. That's called thinking.
And wisdom.
Yeah, and also saying, okay, there's a red flag here. Well, what about if this happens? And if you don't get a straight answer, you know something's off there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Mars retrograde is not the time to make decisions. It is not. And I think once it goes direct in November, it is going to be squaring the July 4th eclipse chart. Squaring the sun of the United States, which is the leader of the country, and the direction, and it won't really get back on track till January 3rd of next year. So, you know, I think this is not a good time to make a decision. It's a great time to clean out your closets, clean out your files, you know, do all the things that you need to do so you're ready, you're ready to play the game when it goes direct.
Mm. Awesome. Georgia, some serious gold here at the end. So I hope people listen all the way to the end, because that was some really amazing on-target advice too. So thank you. Thank you so much. I am like, I told you this before, I flooded with memories of how much I enjoyed our interaction several years ago. And I'm so grateful to have you back. I'm so glad Gemini Brett was like, have Georgia come on and talk about these things.
This has been lovely. I just love talking with you. You have such a wonderful energy. Of course, you're Capricorn, right? You said you're Capricorn.
Yes, yeah.
I have a family full of them.
Nice. It is a very family feeling with you.
Yes, it is. And I really, someday perhaps we can meet in person. If I ever go back to Hawaii again, you know?
Yeah, well, my whole family lives like right by you. So maybe
you're right
if I
here.
Get
if you're ever down here,
family.
Give me a holler.
Yes.
Give me a holler. If I'm in California, I'd love to see you.
Awesome.
This has been so fun. Thank you for including me.
Thank you, Georgia. And thanks to all of you for tuning in and for, as always, being a part of our community, for making astrology a part of your life. If you want to, first of all, Georgia, how do they get in touch with you if they want to follow your work?
The website is starcycles.com. And they can get a hold of me at stathis.georgia@gmail.com. And also they can go over to Amazon to get the new book, Pushing Through Time, Synodic Cycles and Their Developing Phases, and also Business Astrology 101. And if you go to the website now, we have a brand new 2021, I call it the cheat sheet for all, it's a color-coded movement of the planets. It's $6.95. Download it, order that, and keep it at their desk as a workstation.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, Georgia. And for those of you who are wanting to get the, first of all, if you want to use this time of innovation and learning and getting creative to learn astrology, I highly recommend you check out our Astrology Foundations course that we're doing with Rick Levine.
Rick's good.
Yeah, he's so good. He's so good. It's starting on October 4th. And you can get in now and start to take advantage of your bonuses. So one of the bonuses is a mastery class he did on quincunx. Gosh, he has me all mixed up with this word because he says it's really quincunx. It's not quincunx.
Yeah, quincunx. Yeah,
yes. The 150. Yes. So anyways, you can get started on that bonus. We actually have his poetry book coming out soon. But those are the bonuses. And then the first module is going to be released on October 4th. So join us for that course. It's Astrology Foundations. astrologyhub.com/foundations, astrologyhub.com/foundations. So, yes.
Then, all right. Will you send me a link for this so that I can put it on our site at some
Absolutely.
Point?
Absolutely. Of course.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Yes.
Well, this has been fun. Have a great holiday season, however you're going to celebrate it.
You too. Enjoy. You too, Georgia. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Take care.